Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome AJ Alexander to the podcast. Welcome, AJ.
Hey, James. Good afternoon.
So, AJ, you are a principal at ITG Technologies, all right? Prior to that, you spent some time as a consultant in biomechanics. My apologies. Mm-hmm. You're heavily involved in the IoT space, the artificial intelligence space, you know, empowering reliability engineers to use data. Although that was very brief, can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time I tell people, when I meet people and they ask me where I work, it's always a mouthful, ITG. So when you actually elaborate on the acronym, it's information, which is a combination of information technology with automation, which is the world of operational technology. So I, Information Technologies Group. Yeah, and then my background. So when we were talking a couple weeks back, you'd ask me, you know, what's my experience in reliability and maintenance? And really what that word biomechanics and being a biomechanist is really the reliability of the body. So I come from a background in terms of instrumentation, sensoring the human body to hack output and performance with some high profile athletes that you might see on TV, like Justin Verlander and clients like that. So that was my role. So data analytics, but for the human body and kinesiology and learning how to use data and model how the body operates and how to prevent the body from breaking down. So taking that same paradigm, and when I got hired by ITG, my primary focus and role was to grow our analytics business group as a systems integrator and to partner with a technology called Sorba, as opposed to some of the other IoT platforms that I'm sure your audience is aware of, like PTC ThingWorks, Siemens, IBM. And we chose to partner with this specific technology from a strategic thinking and positioning, just due to the fact that it allowed reliability engineers, a lot of our mechanical guys, electrical guys, maintenance guys, to build machine learning models and applications and solutions without needing the data science background or heavy coding and development background required. So really just focusing on problems rapidly and then bringing this particular technology to market and just measuring success and keeping a lot of our wins small and not trying to boil the ocean is really my primary responsibility.
All right, excellent. And when we talked a few weeks back, we were really talking about all the data that's readily available to reliability engineers and not just failure data, but more the automation data, this data that's captured as part of the process within the SCADA, within the historian, all those things. But so with that, what type of data is actually available for us to use within these systems? Is it just fault logs or what else is there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we use this word IIoT quite aggressively. I think we abuse it. So from an automation perspective, really, we've been doing IIoT for 15, 20 years. So that's really the world SCADA, making sensors talk to one another, tying that to control system, and then dumping that data into more your high level business systems like an MES or batch recipes contained, or maybe like a poor man CMMS, or maybe some other more advanced CMMS systems like uptime software or some systems by Fluke. And then you can even pass up that data higher up the food chain, connected to like an SAP or IBM Maximo. So if you look at, I think at that stack and following the Purdue model, it's about a five-tiered layer within the DMZ that there's data residing at every layer within a plant floor. So from discrete applications to the traditional data that's being captured in a PLC system into in a distributed control system up into the HMI, the SCADA. So being able to, what I call that type of data analysis really for many years has been done on a first pass basis where the engineer builds his own rules, builds his own logic according to the application of motion and control. Now being able to now factor in maybe process data that's being stored in OSIPI into more in a more advanced learning algorithm, you know, aka machine learning. This is what really allows the engineer to really tackle reliability and maintenance, you know, much more confidently when you can now factor in all these different inputs into the logic, into your algorithms that you are trying to create and build for the company. Sorry about that. My phone went off.
Yeah, no worries. So with that being said, you know, that data that we can leverage at that level might include positioning and errors off robotics. It could include flow rates. It could include sensory information, you know, various. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, so, pressure, temperature, flows, environmental data, you know, set point data, failure codes. As long as it's time stamped and it's in some sort of a numerical format, then a machine learning algorithm can essentially process in any kind of time series data and be able to correlate these different tags and inputs to give you a much better overview of the output that you're looking for. So be able to cluster within that data really what makes sense, what's an outlier, and what's the objective. Are you trying to find anomalies within your process? Are you trying to classify problems that you're already aware of? Or are you trying to determine you know, an X variable that's going to affect your output or your process or your quality? So those are kind of some of the applications that by purely just looking at your data can give you a lot of insight.
All right, excellent. Now, where is all this information stored typically?
So that depends. And I use that answer quite frequently because you can deal with a CNC customer that has it in their proprietary software. And then you can deal with much more open, much more IoT forward thinking customers where that data is residing in an Amazon data lake, or it's, you know, they've got some discrete, you know, applications and robots where you've got to grab that information directly from the PLC. Or then you have some other time duration applications where you basically have to grab that information directly from the sensors. So to tie that to an IO module and then convert those analog values into some sort of a digital format that can eventually be modeled. So my go-to answer, James, is if it can be collected by a human, whether it's by a handheld thermography device or some sort of vibration analysis, if it can be modeled, or if you use a human to perform any kind of an analysis at any level within your plant, then that can also be modeled by a machine learning algorithm at some level or some degree.
All right. Excellent. So we have this data stored somewhere. How can organizations take advantage of that data from an equipment automation standpoint or that process information to drive reliability? Can they leverage that to make improvements?
Absolutely. And that's really where, again, going to be very much a repetitive, redundant, but it's really, that's where the role of a data scientist comes in. But not every organization can afford a data scientist because a data scientist can essentially take all those different data sources you mentioned. That is all unstructured data. So a lot of companies spend quite a bit of time on trying to structure that data and get it into a format that can be pushed to a platform where the intelligence and analytics can be built. So all the feature engineering of the data, selecting the tags, making sure that it's cleansed, and it actually paints the story of your process or your equipment. Majority of the data scientists today spend their time trying to get that what's called data engineering of the data. So for a process engineer, they're currently, you know, a lot of those guys are already doing that as their roles and responsibilities, just making sure it's in the right tables, the formats, all these technical nuances of even getting the data prepped and ready. I'm almost thinking of it as like your vegetables when you're trying to, you know, cook a meal. You want to get all that prepped. It's the same concept. It's just that's really where, you know, some of these more specialty and niche focused engineering roles out there, that's their only job is to make use of that. But to get to that point, you've got to spend quite a bit of time on transforming that data.
All right. Excellent. Now, they spend a lot of time transforming that data, getting it ready. But how can organizations take advantage of all that data out there? Sure. You know, they're not data scientists, most of them. So how do we take advantage of it?
Yeah, that's another great question. And I think you're throwing me up a softball here. So that specific question that you're asking me is the premise on why we chose to partner with a platform that can eliminate that. Essentially, it's a very resource intensive gig. So Sorba, allows engineers to essentially import the data so they can make a call or grab that information through a connector called OPC UA, some of that open protocol, IoT connections to grab information from different data sources on the plant floor. So to grab that data from any source on the plant floor, import it into a platform that again allows you to drag and drop and create and train data with models that are already pre-built. Think of it as like almost like an app store for the application that you had in mind. So there's tools available out there today that are available on Amazon that allow an engineer, they have some knowledge or some domain expertise of what they want to accomplish. There are tools that allow, like I said, engineers to start getting and diving deeper in the weeds with what their data and the story that their data is telling. So that can be done, you know, in OSI Pi. A lot of that alerting and thresholds and rules base is, you know, currently being done in a PLC, but a controller and that control system in general has, you know, a certain function, and it has a lot of safety built in. And to take that analysis to the next level, it really requires some of the other, what I call available open source tools. It could be Sorba, it could be Google, it could be Microsoft. There's really the ability to get started on this essentially becoming a data science practitioner journey without having to go to school to become an academic or understand all the mathematics. All of that is readily available today.
All right. Excellent. Now, so what types of decisions does this AI, this data, these decision support tools allow us to make as reliability engineers? What are we, yeah. What does it really allow
so let's,
us to
let's
do?
Let's dig a little deep into that and let's actually share an application. So let's say your primary role as a reliability engineer is to ensure the uptime of this $1 million genset diesel turbine engine. Okay, you guys perform, you know, your oil analysis, you do your scheduled maintenance, but really you guys are still, for whatever reason, there are certain electrical trips and things are still failing and these springs are busting and you know, there's gaps. And, you know, again, there's still part of that equation. We're still not being able to really be proactive when it comes to our maintenance. Training that data, let's take the process data and the condition monitoring data and also the failure history data of that genset engine. And let's run it through what we call an unsupervised learning algorithm, machine learning model. That model will cluster the normal operating conditions and state of that machine. And what you could do is now you could actually flag anomalies and eliminate some false positives that are pretty common done as a human. So if you could flag anomalies in the data, classify that particular problem, you can now create, you know, a lead time alert to when maybe the oil filter differential pressure is going to trigger and going to exceed that 80% probability threshold. Or maybe you want to be able to detect, you know, when your voltage or your power is going to trip a fan that's going to, you know, end up causing some sort of overcurrent to your drive. So, and to dig even a little deeper into that, machine learning can also be able to pinpoint the exact tag or input that has the highest contribution to that particular asset from failing. So if you could correlate that tag, and yourself as the engineer and as a subject matter expert can now correlate that with, you know, some work order data, some failure data, you now understand the checklist and the root cause and how to apply maintenance before it happens, whether that's ordering a part X amount of days ahead of time, or maybe not having to spend time and resources on that particular maintenance routine. It's really, and you could automate that, you know, entire workflow. So really understanding that it's really a whole new paradigm shift. You know, James, you got to now adopt and develop a methodology to fix problems that when you look at it and you put your hand on the conveyor line, things seem to be operating, you know, pretty good. But now I have got to apply different steps to troubleshoot and to fix equipment that is apparently seeming to operate, you know, quite fine. So it's really, it's very, in terms of the conditions, you can get down very into the granular level in terms of what it is you're trying to accomplish from a condition monitoring or process standpoint.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. If we have all this data readily available, you know, we have these tools to help. Why don't integrators take advantage of all this to provide some of that insights to asset owning companies?
Yeah. So to me, integrators and, you know, the boots on the ground in terms of, you know, everyday engineers, reliability engineers that are putting out fires, these guys are really the ones that are going to be the missing link. I mean, all the buzz of AI and IoT. So having that domain knowledge with the right tool set and the ability to, again, from an implementation and then learning curve aspect, it's really this particular group that's going to really make IoT, you know, come to life. So the answer to your question is, you know, a lot of integrators, even from a customer base, you know, these guys are, you know, doing pretty good on the control side, but there's a limit and there's a capacity into von Neumann, who was a pretty well computer scientist in the realm of artificial intelligence. One of his theories was the way computing is heading today, that it's eventually going to reach a ceiling. So all of these production systems, they're all going to be capped in terms of its ability to process data, store information. That's why you see a lot of this technology migrating to the cloud, where you now have much more scalability and much more flexibility to increase your computing power. So I guess the answer to your question is, the reason I guess integrators aren't taking more advantage is because it's a different paradigm. So instead of selling a HMI suite, instead of selling parts and widgets and terminal blocks, you're really now selling your ability to solve a problem entirely. So you're coming in through the front door and you're sitting down with some of these larger, you know, Fortune 100 companies, and you're trying to solve an enterprise-wide problem that really data and analytics can get you there a lot quicker than some of these traditional, you know, RCM methods. But understanding that RCM and reliability is really your first pass. So all of that domain knowledge for the past 30, 35 years, you can now validate that and make that decision-making that much more stronger in parallel if you had the technology and the essentially some of the use cases and the ability to run both of those solutions in parallel towards the end game of being, you know, a part, you know, having no parts of defect and having pretty high OEE, you know, metrics and having improved, you know, that's the goal, right? Is sustainability and looking at your asset as, man, this is really the lifeblood of my organization. So a lot of integrators struggle with that because that's not the focus. Solving problems is not the focus. It's more of just, hey, let's throw a body at this infrastructure job and let's just let them sit on site for, you know, months at a time, where analytics and IoT, you're trying to come in and help these companies, you know, really get some value from their data and help them uncover new revenue streams on the factory floor.
All right. Absolutely. Now, why don't organizations take full advantage of that data? Okay. Integrators is one thing, but the asset owning companies, why aren't they leveraging that data to drive reliability? What's stopping?
Well, when I think about it, you got two groups. You've got your IT group and then you've got your OT group. And again, there is a huge cultural, they are trying to do two different things. And so they're very much, there's a lot of silos in these organizations. There's not a lot of collaboration. So if there's not some sort of executable strategy coming from management, coming from the C-suite down, then it's really hard for, again, the information that's coming from the OT level, tier one, tier two, and then the information that's being stored in the business systems IT world, both of those groups and both of those pools of data have got to come together, and both of those engineers and stakeholders have got to come together and figure out how they work and how they standardize, right? They don't want to continue reinventing the wheel on some of these different problem-solving applications that they're making. They want to have a collective vision, and that really comes from the top down. So it's, I guess the answer to your question, James, is just there's a lot of silos, and, you know, everybody's focused on their own task in terms of productivity, you know, what's right in front of them. And to have that cultural shift mentally in that paradigm to say, you know what, we really need to get these guys involved, get these subject matter experts involved, get the reliability engineers involved. Everyone's really got to come together and really put something on the board, from a whiteboard, from pen to paper, and then execute that on a small level, and then you can scale it out.
All right. So it comes back to, you know, what typically plagues organizations and halves for the last 40, 50 years is, right, getting those silos to work together. Once we have that, then we can start taking advantage of this data, leveraging expertise plus the technology side, you know, to make better decisions. Now, Now, what technology or tools really exist to do this? You mentioned, you know, some of the tools you offer. Like, are those just neural networks? Are they learning? What, you know, what are these things that we have out there that allow us to make better decisions?
Yeah. So, in the world of machine learning, you have, there's a, quite a bit of libraries out there. So from a pure programming data science, I don't know if I want to get that too much in the minutia, but there are tools that allow you to just process the data and then use a, what's it, like you said, a self-learning algorithm that can learn just based on historical data to predict or make some sort of decision-making capability for the future. So that can be a deep neural network, that can be a convolutional neural network, that can be a Gaussian mixed mode. So there's a lot of sexy algorithms out there. But what people really don't understand is, what does it take to make that algorithm work in a production environment? So if I do really well with my trick, because that's really all data science is a lot of calculations and a lot of statistics and a lot of scoring. So these guys are really looking for the highest score. They're looking for that high percentage of accuracy before they want to deploy it to a problem. Where the world we come from, and like I mentioned, Sorba, it allows you a greater than 80%. These algorithms can tell an engineer that you are going to have some sort of anomaly degradation to this wire compactor in 30 days. You might want to check it out. So machine learning has a very good ability, like I mentioned earlier, to sift through the false positives in your data and to also represent and give you and tell you an accurate story of how your machines are running based on the inputs that you're feeding the model.
All right. Excellent. Now, what do you think makes the biggest difference in being successful when you're leveraging that data and technology?
What makes the biggest difference? I think really what it comes down to, James, is whoever's owning this from a project standpoint is that person's ability to articulate the results effectively to all facets of the organization. So whether that's your business guys or that's your engineers, you really need the ability. So based on your analytics and the training and all the algorithm development that you're doing, if from a reliability aspect, if you cannot tie the data or the results to the dollar sign, or if you cannot articulate why this is important on both sides of the fence, then you're really going to be stuck in what we call pilot purgatory, or AI purgatory, or IoT purgatory. You really need that champion that is on the selling side and also on the receiving side to really be gain that sponsorship, throughout the organization.
All right. So we need that sponsorship. We need that champion to drive across all the different silos, continue to push that forward until we get that pilot and that success. Correct. Now, if you had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would typically change in how organizations are looking to leverage this data? Is it doing a pilot area? Is it validating the technology first? Is it getting the data science?
It would really, if I had to wave my wand, you'd be surprised, James, at some of these big companies. They're talking about doing analytics, but they don't really understand the problem that they're trying to solve. So let's break that down even further. If we look at the shop floor, I mean, these guys don't even have a very good, MRO program. They don't have a good preventative maintenance program in place. So to me, step one is getting those ducks in a row. If you could understand your business from an operational, and then obviously maintenance and reliability aspect. Once you've got that piece covered, then we can start talking about analytics. For companies that don't even understand, I was talking to a recent utility here in town, and they had a $500,000, essentially a power generation unit, so almost like a flywheel shaft type of system, go down, and it cost them not only the cost of the equipment, but all the dollars per hour that it costs to, provide energy and electricity to the surrounding area. So when I was talking, to the director of production, that feedback was, if that happened, we never heard about it. So there's a lot that's being shoved under the rug, and there needs to be visibility. So I think it starts with these companies. If I had to wave my wand, just admit you have a problem, just admit that there's room for improvement and operational efficiencies and improvements, and how can we get there? So start inviting, some of these experts to the table and start, educating yourself and becoming familiar with the process and the lingo and the jargon and validating with use cases. There's just, that you gotta, it's almost like being an alcoholic anonymous. You know, you want to admit you have a problem and you want to surround yourself with individuals that can help you get, you know, get to your recovery and solution much quicker.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. Now we've talked a lot about automation, data, analytics. What's the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation? What's the one thing you want them to do differently tomorrow, next week?
Yeah, I think maybe it comes across the theme that you're already currently doing with Iriducio and your following is really just continue learning, you know, continue educating yourself, be very vulnerable, understanding that technology changes every single day. I think that's something Terrence and, you know, the reliability community talks about quite free. It's just, it's so adaptive and it's rapidly changing. So have that hunger to learn and to ask questions and to put, always be on guard from a sniff test perspective. You know, ask the tough questions, want to see use cases, you know, do the demos, do the trials, try to pull monies from an operational bucket, you know, and then build a business case and make sure it makes sense. And I mean, because to me, if it really just starts with one person and within a reliability group of a manufacturing customer, and you'd be surprised at the fact that someone's willing to take on this kind of initiative. So, you know, don't be scared. Understand that you're not the only one that's willing to take risks, because it's those who take risks, James, that are really going to reap those dividends and reap the fruit in the future.
All right. Excellent. Great advice. Now, before we go, where can people find out more about you? What activities or events you involved in? Where can they find out more about your solutions?
Yeah, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I will be attending the Society of Maintenance Reliability Professionals event in October out in Kentucky. They're having their annual conference. So I'm excited to get plugged in and learn more about what's going on in the industry. But for the most part, either sorbasoft.com or LinkedIn, I give my phone number out, but I don't know if that's the right etiquette. I'm fairly young, and you know, I love even the first conversation we had. So the more, I think there's a lot of power in your network and your ability to just have conversations and talk about problems and understand what you're doing really well. Because let's face it, you know, I think what's stand the test of time has been the maintenance reliability community and all these different methodologies and wins that they've had up until this point. So we cannot forget, you know, our humble beginnings. And I think that's something that keeps me in check, is just constantly surrounding myself with people that are way, way more smart than I am. Mm-hmm.
All right. Excellent. So I will make sure to put links to those in the show notes, but I have to ask, what is your go-to resource for analytics, statistics, AI, whichever one you choose?
This is a great question. I had someone ask me this a couple months back. The best investment that I've made to consume this information has really been Audible, which is an app where you can just consume information over audio, and then Scribd, which is a competitor for Audible. So I constantly have audiobooks playing. You know, I like to read. It's just, you know, we live in a world of being efficient and your time is so sacred. So if I can consume that audibly, I watch videos. I try to follow some people on LinkedIn that are pretty respectable in the community. And I think LinkedIn, man, in terms of a platform, hopefully it doesn't go down the wayside, but as of today, it's a very, very powerful tool to as an engineer to gain knowledge and contribute and to post on forums and kind of what you're doing with Iriducio and your platform. There's really no excuse for the reliability community to make their voice be heard and to gain information.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the ebooks or the audiobooks are a great tool. LinkedIn, I take full advantage of learning from those others as well. I also take advantage of LinkedIn Learning to expand my knowledge in this data science thing that's going on. No, there's lots of resources out there, but I like Audible. You know, LinkedIn as a good resource. Those are all great suggestion. So
yeah,
we
live in some exciting times. I couldn't imagine what it was like in the late 80s, and I can't even wrap my mind around what it's going to be like in the next 15 to 20 years. But we are on the cutting edge of what I believe is going to be the next industrial, next information age revolution.
Absolutely. Well, AJ, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about all these amazing things, AI, leveraging technology, leveraging that automation data, all those things. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And hopefully this sticks home with some people. Thank you for having me.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.